Our third case this morning is 2021-170, Rachel Davis versus Tammy Nathaniel et al. For the appellant, Ms. Grosky.
Madam Chief Justice, Associate Justices.
You can remove your
pen. I just was realizing that. Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Leslie Grosky, and I'm here because the state of Ohio has a compelling state interest in preserving the rights of children to have a relationship with their family after a relative adoption. Excuse me. A relative of a step-parent in a step-parent adoption can file for visitation after the adoption, even though that might be an intact family. If the children's father had remarried and his wife had adopted the children, that would be an intact family. They would have the rights to raise their children as they saw fit, just as the Nathaniels do. However, the statute would clearly let the maternal grandmother, the maternal aunt, whoever, file an action for grandparent visitation because let's
see. Is there a final order here? I'm sorry, I'm over here.
Well, I was not counsel at the appeal,
but
the Ninth District Court of Appeals found that the appointment of a guardian who would interfere with that relationship between the adoptive parents, who are now the parents, we acknowledge that, and the children, made it subject to an interlocutory appeal. And that was the basis for their ruling.
And so it was the appointment of the guardian that made it?
That's really what brought this case to the attention of the Ninth District Court of Appeals.
So does that mean any case where a guardian's appointed, then that can be immediately appealed?
I wouldn't think so. I think the reason that the Ninth District took this appeal is that it viewed it as the interference with the fundamental right to raise your children. I think they were incorrect in how they ruled, but I think that was the reason they found this was an appropriate matter for an interlocutory appeal.
And so what actually happened here? Were there any visits with the grandparents? Did anything happen?
Or? There was none. That's part of our problem here is we're doing this all on the procedural issue of whether the relative of the wife of a petitioner, remember that Mr. Nathaniel is a petitioner. His wife, Mrs. Nathaniel, is related to Ms. Davis, who sought visitation. So that's why it's important that they be treated the same way as if the father had remarried. You would be able to invade that intact family because it's suitable to hear the case. We don't have the facts on whether it is in the children's best interests to have a relationship. That was stopped before we could learn those facts. And that's very important because Revised Code Section 310904 has the factors that the trial court would consider when it determines whether the maternal aunt can see these children. It's really important that we let that process happen so that these children aren't treated differently because their aunt and uncle adopted them rather than their father's new wife adopted them. There is an equal protection issue, but the children have a right to maintain these close and loving relationships. Excuse me. The Court of Appeals relied on the idea that the relatives of parents whose parental rights are terminated have no right to seek visitation. But that's not the case here. The mother's rights never were terminated. She died, sadly, of cancer. That's the only reason there was any adoption in this matter.
Could that be characterized as a over this way to the look far to the?
I'm sorry. I apologize.
It's just the nature of the size of our bench, too.
Thank you.
Does the death of a parent, is that perceived or seen as a severing of parental rights, maybe not termination?
Conceptually, that would be a difference. I mean, we know what terminating parental rights is. That's a creature of statute.
Correct.
And that means that those people have done something that their rights are terminated. If the mother's death had resulted in father remarrying, intact family, right to raise children.
Right.
But the statute says the relatives of the deceased parent have a right to intervene and have their cause considered.
And the Court of Appeals determined that, correct me if I'm wrong too, please, that because the children were adopted, they don't have, quote, deceased parents. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe that is the holding.
Okay.
The Court of Appeals was relying on this court's decision in Re Reitenauer, which is subject to distinction on several bases. Procedurally, it's very different. In Reitenauer, it was a matter of determining the denial of an adoption because that would terminate the grandparents' rights. It involved a juvenile court rule that said, even after an adoption, these grandparents will have parent visitation rights. And it is different because it's factually different. In Reitenauer, those were strangers who were adopting these children. They have a reason to separate the children out that's not present in this case. The Ninth District Court of Appeals recognized that the children remained related to their maternal aunt. The merits of the Reitenauer case were very significant. There was a psychologist who recommended that any visitation by the grandparents should be curtailed until they could be closely supervised. That was a factual difference that we don't have here. I can't develop the facts because we never got a chance to do that at the trial level. And statutorily, it's different. At the time this court decided Reitenauer, and Martin for that matter, there was no statute that referenced any right for grandparent visitation after adoption. I know this is an unusual situation because the children are related to an adoptive parent rather than to the deceased parent or the divorced parent. But statutorily, our legislature has recognized that it's important to consider rights after adoption. And once again, we go back to what is in the best interest of the children. This court permitting Ms. Davis to proceed does not automatically grant her visitation. It grants the trial court an opportunity to have the guardian do her work and for the children to have an in-camera interview if appropriate and for the facts to be developed to determine whether under the numerous factors of 310904, it is in the children's best interest to continue to see their maternal aunt. Excuse me. In this case, the children are related to the wife of their adoptive father. They are also related to the sister-in-law of their adoptive father. There are two sets of familial and bloodline relationships here, which should be preserved for these children.
Yet both of the Nathaniels
really
don't want there to be a relationship with Mrs. Nathaniel's family. With Ms. Davis.
That's what I'm understanding,
right,
yes.
Okay.
Again,
And we don't know why, or it's not relevant necessarily to us, but your position is there should not be an automatic exclusion. As you say, this is something that the trial court should at least be able to consider and use what's in the best interest of the children as its consideration for whether it allows essentially a termination of familial rights and relationships.
Yes, Your Honor.
The minor children.
I believe that's very accurately setting forth our concern here.
And of course, then I would imagine your counsel for the other side will say, now it's up to the parents, the new parents, adoptive parents, and all the authority that comes with that to make visitation decisions for their children.
Well, and that would be true if the father had remarried and they have an intact family, and she adopts the children, that's now new parents. But the statutory scheme permits the decedent's family to seek visitation, and that's exactly what's happening.
That's all that's being asked for here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
We're looking for an opportunity for the maternal aunt to present her case to the trial court. We're looking for a guardian ad litem whose motivation is solely to preserve the children's best interests, to make an investigation, talk to the children, see how they interact with Ms. Davis, and give them a chance to determine whether it is indeed in the children's best interests to continue that relationship through visitation. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chief Justice O'Connor, Justices, may it please the court. I'm Lee Groskop. I am here on behalf of the appellees, Jeff and Tammy Nathaniel. Now, a final decree of adoption obtained by a married couple supersedes any statutory privilege of visitation that may have previously existed for an extended family member, a biological extended.
Not true under all cases, though, Counselor.
That's true, and I would ask that this court not judicially expand the step-parent adoption exception that is currently found in the Ohio Revised Code, because by judicially expanding the adoption exception, it will affect the fundamental liberty interest of the appellees in
this
case.
Why do we have jurisdiction to hear this? Why is this a final order?
Because, well, it is true that this is an interlocutory order that was appealed from, and the trial court in this case ordered, what was appealed was the order from the trial court was for a married couple with kids that the state of Ohio would cede custody from them against their wishes and have these kids interact with someone that they did not want to.
Wouldn't change custody.
It would be physical custody. So visitation under Ohio law and case law is physical custody. And what?
Well, the state of Ohio orders kids to go to school, do lots of things when they're not with their parents. I mean,
well, in this case, it is a mother and father who are married, and their wishes and their concerns is a fundamental liberty interest that they possess. They have a fundamental liberty interest in the care.
Why not go through, let the judge make a decision, and if the decision is one that you disagree with, why not appeal at the end? That's normally the way we do things.
The reasons why is because based on statute, this court's precedent, and their constitutional rights would be...
What statute and what precedent?
To start with, in 3107.15a, that is the adoption, the effect of adoption.
No, what the jurisdictional precedent and statute that lets you appeal now.
It's on the statute in the interlocutory, the ability to appeal in an interlocutory order. There is several factors that you can appeal
In Ohio, it has to be a final order to be appealable.
Unless it involves a substantial right, and in this case it does. It affects the liberty interest of a married mother and father in their care, control, and custody of their kids. The state of Ohio is taking out of their care and control against their wishes and giving physical custody, visitation
they're
to someone they do
not. They're not giving physical custody. They're letting someone else evaluate them in the interactions, right? That's not giving physical custody. The parents retain physical custody of the child.
It's the visitation for that limited circumstance. They do not want their children to interact with the family member in this case. And that is their wish. And going against them will cede custody out of their hands.
So any time during a divorce action when a court orders pre-decree one side or the other to have visitation, that would be immediately appealable?
In a divorce, you are dealing between two parents. In this case, we are dealing with a parent and a non-parent. So that's distinguishable.
So, Mr. Groskop, if I'm reading the record correctly, even though there was a motion to dismiss and a motion for judgment on the pleadings, the trial court didn't grant those, but basically said that Mrs. Davis and the guardian ad litem could interact with the children who your client has a constitutional right concerning because they're now the parents, could interact with them for the purposes of permitting guardian ad litem to complete an investigation. So if I go back to the substantial right, it goes to a constitutional right.
Yes.
And is this what you are saying? I mean, if we fit it into Chapter 25 of the revised code on, you know, what is a final appealable order, mm-hmm. is this the basis for why the Ninth District went ahead and decided it, even though this was not brought to finality in the trial court?
Yes, absolutely. And to give a hypothetical, if any justice, because I have a son, and if any justice here disagreed with my decision, you could petition the court and ask for visitation. And you could ask for a guardian ad litem to be appointed. And that court could order me to give up my son to one of you against my wishes, and that's what we prevented.
But was that even remotely the same? One, we would be strangers to your child. Ms. Davis is not. Two, we have never had any interactions with your child prior to, as in this case, Ms. Davis has prior to her sister's passing. This is not a stranger scenario. Well, what you're arguing is that there is less protections or less opportunity for even the trial court to decide the best interests of a child when a family member is involved than when a stranger is involved.
My example is the same in regards to the end result. In this case, there is no statutory privilege available in this case for the appellant. In this case, there's three triggering circumstances that allows for an extended family member to come and ask for visitation. The first is 310.9.11. That is where one parent dies. 310.9.12. That is where an unmarried mother gives birth to a child. The third is 310.9.051b, which is in a divorce or some other domestic relations matter, allows for an extended family member to come and ask for visitation. In this case, no triggering circumstance applies. The Nathaniels are both married. They both adopted the children when they were married, and there's been no divorce. There's been no domestic relation process, which could end the analysis right there. There is no statutory privilege available for a non-parent in this case to argue for visitation. It does not exist. And to go one step further, the adoption exception, the plain language of 310.9.11 and also 310.7.15c provides that if there is an adoption by the step-parent, so if mother and father passes away, mother remarries, the new spouse adopts the kids as his own. That is the step-parent adoption that currently exists in the Ohio Revised Code. But this situation is entirely different. You have a mother and a father, a married couple, adopt these children as their own. And the adoption exception that currently exists in the code does not apply to their situation. Now, the plain meaning of the statute could not be more clear in that circumstance. But to go one step further, this court has precedent that we can turn to. In re Ridenour was the first case decided by this court in 1991. It was a 4-2-1 decision. The two concurrences agreed with the majority except as to remand. The majority in that case held that the adoption superseded what makes it interesting is to back up. In the In re Ridenour case, there was a juvenile court that ordered permanent custody to the state. And it also allowed for visitation for the family members. So in that case, you actually had a court determine that it was in the best interest of the children to be able to visit with their grandparents. Well, the kids lived with the Ridenour family. The Ridenour family attempted to adopt the children. And this court held that the adoptions even superseded a prior court determining that it was in the best interest for those kids to be able to see their extended family members. And the court gives wonderful policy reasons why. They say that children will be bewildered as adults will be bewildered as adults battle for their attention. And that's true in contested domestic relations litigation, where all family members are trying to divide up visitation rights, physical custody rights for the kids.
What if there's a determination that could be made, and obviously I have no basis for this, but what if the children want to have a relationship with their aunt and see their aunt, and a trial court wouldn't find that there's any negative or bad influence? What if the decision by the Nathaniels is based strictly out of animosity or some power or control tug and pull, and the kids are being used as pawns? Obviously, I'm not saying that's the case. I have no idea. But these are the things that the trial court could determine, right?
Well, we have to assume from the outset that a parent is acting in the best interest of their children when they choose to do something or not to do something. That is what comes with this basic, essential civil right.
So then why wouldn't it then be questioned when two sisters have children, or have nieces or nephews that they both love or share relationships with, the parent passes away, and then one parent, and then the one aunt who becomes parent keeps away from the other. So does that rebut the presumption that a parent always wants what's best for his or her children?
Could you say that one more time?
So why you're saying a parent's decisions on a child are presumed to be what's in the best interest for the child, but under this particular scenario where both parties had relationships with the children and now one seeks to sever a relationship, why doesn't that at least rebut the presumption that the parent is making a decision that's in the best interest of the child?
I agree. If it gets to the merits, you could argue that, but it goes back to we presume, just as we presume that you are innocent until proven guilty, we presume that a parent is acting in the best interest of their child when they make a decision. In this case, they've made a decision that they believe is in the best interest of their child to keep custody entirely from the other side.
Right, and you're saying, and that is not subject to any review, that decision. That's what you're saying.
I am saying that what is subject to review is whether or not there is a statutory privilege that is available for the appellant in this case to access the children for the purposes of visitation rights.
So you're saying there's not even a vehicle for the aunt, Ms. Davis, to initiate a proceeding in the court in order to get a guardian ad litem, to have a best interest investigation, to have the judge make a determination. She doesn't even get through the first threshold as having statutory authority in order to file and ask for what she's wanting.
That's 100% correct. That's 100% correct, because in this case should have ended with a motion to dismiss, that there is no relief available for appellant in this case because no statutory privilege has been provided by the legislature. And they had the opportunity, the legislature could have, because after In re Martin, the next case, the next very important case, which is substantially similar to the facts in this situation. The In re Ridenour case is a 6-1 decision in 1994. The legislature in 1999 added the step-parent adoption exception. So they had the ability to make the change legislatively. They decided to limit it very narrowly to the step-parent. Now, the In re Martin case was why it's substantially similar to the facts in this situation is you had maternal grandparents adopt the child as their own. The adoption was completed, and the paternal grandparents came and requested visitation rights. And this court determined there's no there's no statutory vehicle that exists for paternal grandparents to come and ask for visitation. And if any change needs to happen to allow them to be able to do so, it needs to emanate from the legislature. And that's what connects the point with the 1999. They did determine that it's in the best interest of the children, presumably, to allow the vehicle of visitation when a step-parent, and only a step-parent, adopts the child as their own.
Mr. Groskopf, if the order from the court had been to permit only the guardian ad litem and not Ms. Davis to have contact with the children for the investigation purposes, would you have been here on an interlocutory order?
I would have to talk to my clients, but I would say that the major concern was to cede custody of the children to the family member appellant, that if it had just been the guardian ad litem coming to the home to witness and to discuss with the children, I don't believe that would have raised to the level of appeal that has been raised. The main concern was to prevent the appellant in this case from seeing and interacting with the children.
Thank you.
Now, the Inree Martin case, there's some law that this court discussed, and that law is that at common law, grandparents had no legal rights of access to their grandchildren. So we can take that one step further, that extended family members have no right at common law to access their niece or nephew or grandchildren. Grandparents have no constitutional right of association with their grandkids. And if grandparents are to have visitation rights after an adoption, that must be provided for in statute. The court is distinguishing that there is a difference between an extended family member and a parent. There's a constitutional difference. That constitutional difference is the parent has the fundamental liberty interest.
But the statutes don't do that across the board. You're saying it like it's a wholesale proposition, and it's not. Because you even stated the instances where family members can petition for companionship and custody. So what you say is not as broadly defined as you're putting it now.
And this court did discuss the visitation statutes in Harold versus Collier. And in that case, and maybe that's what we're getting at here, is in that case, this court determined that the visitation statutes that we've discussed, 3109, 11, 12, and 051, that those statutes are constitutional on its face. Now, this court determined that those statutes were narrowly tailored. They were tailored to triggering events where there's not a married mother and father. And what I do disagree with what this court did is they determined that the compelling interest was that of what was in the best interest of the child. The state action in Harold, I would disagree with that analysis on page 40 or on paragraph 44 of the decision. The interest at play is not necessarily the broad interest of what's in the best interest of the child. The interest is the extended family member being able to gain access to the child. So where
counsel,
I think the
counsel, you've used your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Grosky, isn't this a problem for the legislature to take up, to give you a vehicle, give your clients a way to petition the court to allow for visitation? Because right now, it may be in the best interest of the child, and that's what the GAL would have been, could have been able to find out. But that still doesn't give, I can't see, still doesn't give your client the right to knock on the court's door and enter.
Your Honor, I think that the statute that was passed in 2003, well after Ridenour or Martin, does do what we need to do here, because RC 3107.15A1 states that except with respect to the spouse of a petitioner and relatives of the spouse, the rights are cut off. Mr. Nathaniel adopted these children. His spouse is Mrs. Nathaniel, who is related to Ms. Davis. Her rights are not cut off because she is related to the petitioner who filed for this adoption. It may not be the most artful declaration, and I don't think in 2003 we were seeing as many relative adoptions because of deaths, and God knows there are enough juvenile court issues that are resulting in the adoption by relatives in this state. But how much less should these children be deprived of their mother and then their maternal aunt? The statute says that the relatives of the spouse of the petitioner are not cut off. It may not be artful, but I believe it does cover this situation. The Ridenour and Martin cases were decided before the statutory change. The facts in Ridenour are just very significantly different than here. They had the juvenile court order, but a psychologist had interviewed the children and had found that it was inappropriate to continue the grandparent visitation. The adoption would permit these children to have a home, have a stable place, have something that they would not have if the adoption were stopped. And that was what was before this court. Should an adoption be denied, a complete adoption? It's just a very different way of looking at the rights of relatives to have visitation after adoption, as opposed to should the adoption be denied. The opening statement of the Nathaniels is that a final decree trumps all other rights, and that's just not true. If the children's father had remarried and that woman had adopted them, you'd have an intact couple who had fundamental rights to raise those children as they saw fit, and yet absolutely clearly the relatives of the mother, not even the father, we'd go all the way around, relatives of the mother would be able to intervene and seek visitation. This court regularly sees the analysis of the children's best interests. And we don't presume that one side is acting in the children's best interest, because we have divorces where you frequently have two different parents who have very different ideas of what's in the children's best interest. There is a statutory vehicle for relatives of the spouse of a petitioner to consider what is in the children's best interest. I don't think so, but it could be that the Nathaniels are correct. They shouldn't have to permit the children to see their aunt. But it's for the court to determine the best interest pursuant to the same statutory factors as are used in all other considerations of the children's best interest. We would ask that this court reverse the decision of the Ninth District Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement, and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.